Life of Josephus, Vita. My family is not without distinction, but rather descends far back from a line of priests. Just as different peoples have different grounds for claiming nobility, so among us a share in the priesthood is proof of the brilliance of one's lineage. My family belongs not only to the priesthood, but to the first of the 24 priestly courses, and there is considerable distinction even within that group, and to the noblest of the clans within that course. I also belong through my mother to the royal family, for the descendants of Asamoneus, Hasmoneus, of whom she was a descendant, held both the high priesthood and the kingship of our nation for a very long time. Let me trace the succession. Our great-great-grandfather was Simon, called Celis, the Stammerer. He lived at the time when the high priesthood was held by the son of Simon the high priest, who was the first to be named Hyacinus among the high priests. Celis's son Simon had 9 children. Among them was Matthias, called the son of Ephias. He married the daughter of Jonathan the high priest, the first of the descendants of Asamoneus to hold the high priesthood, who was the brother of Simon the high priest. And a son was born to him, Matthias, surnamed the Hunchback, in the first year of the rule of Hyacinus. To this Matthias was born Joseph, in the 9th year of the reign of Alexandra. And to Joseph was born Matthias, in the 10th year of the reign of Archelaus. And to this Matthias I myself was born in the first year of the principate of Gaius Caesar. I have 3 sons, Hyacinus, the eldest, born in the 4th year of the principate of Vespasian Caesar, Justus, born in the 7th year, and Agrippa, born in the 9th year. This, then, is the succession of our family, as I found it recorded in the public records, which I set down in this way for the benefit of those who attempt to slander us, wishing them well. My father Matthias was distinguished not only for his noble birth, but was praised even more for his righteousness, being very well known in Jerusalem, the greatest city among us. I myself, educated together with my brother, who was named Matthias, for he was my full brother by both parents, made great progress in my studies, being reputed to excel in memory and understanding. While still a boy, about 14 years old, I was commended by everyone for my love of letters, so that the chief priests and the leading men of the city constantly came to me to learn something more precisely about our laws. When I was about 16, I decided to gain experience of the several sects existing among us. There are 3 of these. The first is that of the Pharisees, the second that of the Sadducees, and the third that of the Essenes, as we have often said. I reasoned that in this way I would be able to choose the best, if I examined them all. So I submitted myself to hard training and great exertion and went through all 3, and not even considering the experience I had gained through them sufficient, when I learned that a certain man named Bannus was living in the desert, wearing only clothing that came from trees, eating only what grew of itself, and bathing frequently in cold water, day and night, for purity's sake, I became his devoted follower. Having spent 3 years with him and fulfilled my ambition, I returned to the city. At 19 years of age, I began to conduct my public life following the sect of the Pharisees, which is very similar to what the Greeks call the Stoic school. After I had completed my 26th year, it fell to me to go up to Rome for the following reason. At the time when Felix was procurator of Judea, he had certain priests of my acquaintance, good and honorable men, bound in chains, and sent to Rome on a small and trivial charge, to give an account of themselves to Caesar. Wishing to find some way to secure their release, especially when I learned that even in their hardship they had not forgotten their piety toward the divine, but were sustaining themselves on figs and nuts, I arrived in Rome, having faced many dangers at sea. For when our ship went down in the middle of the Adriatic, we who numbered about 600 swam through the whole night, and around daybreak, by God's providence, a ship from Cyrene appeared to us. And I, along with some others, about 80 of us in all, outstripped the rest and were taken up into the ship. Having been saved and brought to Dikaiochia, which the Italians call Puteoli, I became acquainted, through friendship, with Halotyrus, an actor of mimes who was a great favorite of Nero's and a Jew by birth. And through him I was introduced to Poppaea, Caesar's wife, and lost no time in asking her to secure the release of the priests. Having received great gifts in addition to this favor from Poppaea, I returned to my own country. There I found the beginnings of revolutionary movements already underway, and many people greatly elated at the prospect of revolt from Rome. I therefore tried to restrain those bent on rebellion and urge them to reconsider, setting before their eyes those against whom they would be fighting, and pointing out that the Romans were superior not only in military experience, but also in good fortune, and that they should not, rashly and altogether senselessly, bring upon their homelands, their families, and themselves the risk of the worst calamities. This is what I said, and I pressed the point urgently, trying to dissuade them, foreseeing that the outcome of the war would be most disastrous for us. But I did not persuade them, for the madness of those bent on ruin prevailed by far. Fearing, then, that by continually saying such things I might come to be hated and suspected of favoring the enemy's cause, and might run the risk of being seized and put to death by them. Since the Antonia, which was a fortress, was already in their hands, I withdrew into the inner court of the temple. But after the killing of Manahem and the leaders of the band of brigands, I came out of the temple again and associated with the chief priests and the leaders of the Pharisees. No little fear gripped us as we saw the populace under arms, while we ourselves were at a loss what to do, being unable to stop the revolutionaries, and with the danger plainly confronting us. We said that we agreed with their views, but advised them to hold their position and let the enemy come on, so that they might gain credit for justly taking up arms in their own defense. In doing this, we were hoping that before long Cestius would come up with a large force and put an end to the revolt. But when he came and joined battle, he was defeated, with many of his men falling. And the defeat of Cestius became a disaster for our whole nation. For those who desired war were emboldened all the more by this, and, having defeated the Romans, hoped to prevail to the end. A hope reinforced by another circumstance of the following kind. The inhabitants of the cities surrounding Syria seized the Jews living among them, together with their wives and children, and killed them, though they had no charge to bring against them. For these Jews had neither planned any revolutionary act against Roman rule, nor shown any hostility or treachery toward those very people. The people of Scythopolis committed the most impious and lawless acts of all. For when Jews attacked them from outside as enemies, they forced the Jews living among them to take up arms against their own kinsmen, a thing forbidden among us, and, having joined battle with them against the invaders, they overcame those who attacked. But once they had won, they forgot their pledge of good faith toward these residents and allies, and put them all to death, though they numbered many thousands. The Jews living in Damascus suffered the same fate. But I have set forth these matters more precisely in my books on the Jewish War. I have mentioned them here now because I wish to make clear to my readers that the war against the Romans was not the choice of the Jews, but was, for the most part, forced upon them. So then, after Cestius had been defeated, as I have said, the leading men of Jerusalem, seeing that the brigands and revolutionaries were well supplied with weapons, and fearing that, being themselves unarmed, they might fall into the power of their enemies, as indeed later happened, and learning that all of Galilee had not yet revolted from Rome, but that part of it was still quiet, sent me, together with two other priests, good and honorable men, Josar and Judas, to persuade the troublemakers to lay down their arms, and to teach them that it would be better for the arms to be kept in the hands of the best men of the nation. It was decided that these men should always keep their weapons ready for what might come, but should wait to see what the Romans would do. Having received these instructions, I set out for Galilee. I found the people of Sepphoris embroiled in no small struggle over their homeland, since the Galileans had decided to plunder it because of its friendship toward the Romans, and because it had offered its right hand and pledge of loyalty to Cestius Gallus, governor of Syria. But I freed all of these from their fear, persuading the crowds on their behalf, and permitting them to send whatever messages they wished, on account of their relatives held as hostages by Cestius at Dor, Dor being a city of Phoenicia. As for the inhabitants of Tiberias, I found that they had already taken up arms, for the following reason. There were three factions in the city, one consisting of respectable men, led by Julius Capulus. This man, together with all those associated with him, Herod son of Myerus and Herod son of Gamalus, and Compsus son of Compsus, for Crispus, brother of the latter, who had once been prefect under the great king, happened to be residing on his own estates across the Jordan. All those named urged that at that time they should remain loyal to the Romans and to the king. This view was not shared by Pistis, who was led astray by his son Justice, for Justice was by nature somewhat unstable. The second faction, made up of the most insignificant people, was determined on war. Justice, son of Pistis, the leader of the third group, pretended at first to hesitate about the war, but in fact desired a change of affairs, thinking he would gain power for himself through such upheaval. Coming forward into the assembly, he tried to persuade the people that their city had always ruled over Galilee, even in the days of Herod the Tetrarch. Its founder, though Herod had wished the city of Sepphoris to be subject to Tiberias, and that they had not lost this primacy even under King Agrippa the Father, and had retained it up to the time when Felix governed Judea. But now, he said, they had suffered misfortune in being given as a gift to the younger Agrippa by Nero. For as soon as Sepphoris submitted to the Romans, it had at once taken the lead in Galilee, while the royal treasury and the archives had been removed from Tiberias to it. Saying this and much else besides against King Agrippa, in order to incite the populace to revolt, he added that now was the time to take up arms, and, gaining the Galileans as allies, they would readily rule over them. On account of the hatred the Galileans bore toward the people of Sepphoris for maintaining their loyalty to the Romans, and so, with a large force, to turn to vengeance against them. By saying this, he roused the crowd, for he was a capable demagogue, able to get the better of those who opposed him through trickery and deceit in speech. Indeed, he was not without some education in Greek learning, relying on which he undertook to write a history of these events, thinking that by this composition he would get the better of the truth. But concerning this man, how base his life was, and how he, together with his brother, came close to being the cause of our ruin, I will make clear as my account proceeds. At that time, then, Justice persuaded the citizens to take up arms, and forced many who were unwilling to do so as well. And setting out with all these men, he burned the villages of the Gadarenes and Hippenians, which happened to lie on the borders of Tiberias and the territory of the Scythopolitans. Such, then, was the state of affairs at Tiberias. The situation at Gischala was as follows. John, son of Levi, seeing some of the citizens greatly elated over the revolt from Rome, tried to restrain them and urged them to maintain their loyalty. He was not able to succeed, however hard he tried, for the surrounding peoples, the Gadarenes, the Beriganeans, and the Tyrians, gathered a large force, fell upon the Gischalans, and took Gischala by storm. And after burning it and then raising it further, they withdrew to their own territory. John, provoked by this, armed all his followers and, engaging the peoples just mentioned, recaptured Gischala, and afterward rebuilt it with stronger walls for its future security. Gamala, however, remained loyal to Rome for the following reason. Philip, son of Jasimus, prefect of King Agrippa, having unexpectedly escaped alive from the royal palace at Jerusalem while it was under siege, fell into another danger. He came close to being killed by Manahem and the brigands with him. Certain Babylonian kinsmen of his who were in Jerusalem prevented the brigands from carrying out the deed. Philip, having remained there 4 days, fled on the fifth, using a wig so as not to be recognized, and, arriving at one of his own villages lying near the fortress of Gamala, sent to some of his men, ordering them to come to him. But as he was considering this, Providence, for his own good, prevented it, for had this happened, he would certainly have perished. For a fever suddenly seized him, and he wrote letters to Agrippa's children, Agrippa and Berenice, and gave them to one of his freedmen to carry to Varus. This man was at that time the administrator of the kingdom, appointed by the kings themselves, since they had gone to Berytus, wishing to meet Cestius. Varus then, on receiving Philip's letter and learning that he had survived, took it badly, thinking that he himself would henceforth appear useless to the kings once Philip arrived. So he brought the bearer of the letters before the crowd, accused him of forgery, and, claiming he was lying in reporting that Philip was in Jerusalem fighting the Romans alongside the Jews, had him put to death. When the freedman did not return, Philip, at a loss to know the reason, sent out a second man with letters again, to report to him what had happened to the one sent before, and why he was delayed. And this man, too, when he arrived, Varus falsely accused and killed. For he had been puffed up with pride by the Syrians of Caesarea, who told him that Agrippa would be put to death by the Romans on account of the sins of the Jews, and that he himself would receive the kingdom, being of royal descent. For Varys was, admittedly, of royal lineage, a descendant of Soemus, who had been tetrarch of the region around Lebanon. For this reason, then, Varys, puffed up with conceit, kept the letters to himself, contriving that the king should not learn of their contents and kept careful watch over all the roads out, lest anyone report to the king what was being done. And so, to gratify the Syrians at Caesarea, he put many of the Jews to death. He also resolved to take up arms, together with the Trachonites of Batania, and march against the Babylonian Jews at Ecbatana, for that is the name they bear. He therefore summoned 12 of the most eminent Jews of Caesarea, and ordered them, once they arrived at Ecbatana, to tell their kinsmen living there that Varys, having heard that they were about to rise up against the king and not believing it, had sent them to persuade them to lay down their arms, for this would be proof to him, and a good one, that he should not believe those who spoke against them. He also ordered them to send the 70 leading men among them to answer the charge that had been brought. The 12 accordingly went to their kinsmen at Ecbatana, and finding them entertaining no thought of revolt, persuaded them to send the 70 as well. These men, suspecting nothing of what was in fact about to happen, sent them off. They came down together with the 12 envoys to Caesarea. There Varys met them with the royal army and killed them all, envoys and all, and then set out on his march against the Jews at Ecbatana. But one of the 70 had escaped ahead and brought them word, and they took up arms and withdrew, with their wives and children, into the fortress of Gamala, abandoning their villages, which were full of good things and possessed many tens of thousands of head of cattle. When Philip learned of this, he too came to the fortress of Gamala. On his arrival, the crowd shouted for him to take command and make war on Varys and the Syrians of Caesarea, for they had become convinced that the king was dead. Philip, however, restrained their impulse, reminding them of the king's benefactions toward them, and describing how great the power of the Romans was. He said it was not to their advantage to raise war against them, and in the end, he persuaded them. The king, learning that Varys intended to destroy in a single day the Jews of Caesarea, with their wives and children, who numbered many tens of thousands, sent for him and dispatched a successor to him, Equus Modius, as we have related elsewhere. Philip kept hold of the fortress of Gamala and the surrounding country, which remained loyal to Rome. Now when I arrived in Galilee and learned these things from those who reported them, I wrote to the council of the people of Jerusalem about the matter and asked what they wished me to do. They urged me, along with my fellow envoys, to remain, if we were willing, and to take charge of and provide for Galilee. My fellow envoys, however, having become well supplied with money from the tithes given to them, which, being priests, they received as their due, decided to return home. But when I urged them to stay until we had settled affairs, they were persuaded. Setting out with them from the city of Sepphoris, I came to a certain village called Bethmaus, 4 stads distant from Tiberias, and from there I sent to the council of Tiberias and to the leading men of the people, inviting them to come to me. When they arrived, Justus having come with them as well, I told them that I had been sent by the community of Jerusalem, together with these men, as an envoy to them, in order to persuade them that the house built by Herod the Tetrarch, which had representations of living creatures on it, ought to be torn down, since the law forbids the making of any such thing. And I urged them to allow us to do this as quickly as possible. For a long time, Capella and the leading men among them were unwilling to permit it, but under compulsion from us, they at last agreed. But Jesus, son of Sapphias, who we said was the first to start the uprising of the sailors and the destitute, got ahead of us, taking some Galileans with him, and set fire to the whole building, expecting to gain much money from it, since he had seen that some of the ceilings of the rooms were overlaid with gold. He and his men plundered a great deal, acting against our wishes, for we, after our meeting with Capella and the leading men of Tiberias, had withdrawn to Upper Galilee from Bethmaus. Jesus and his men killed all the Greek inhabitants there, as well as all who had been their enemies before the war broke out. When I learned of this, I was extremely angry, and going down to Tiberias, I took measures to recover, so far as possible, the royal furnishings from those who had seized them. These were Corinthian lampstands and tables of the royal household, and a considerable weight of uncoined silver. Everything I recovered, I resolved to keep safe for the king. I therefore summoned the 10 leading men of the council, together with Capella son of Antylus, and handed the furnishings over to them, giving orders that they were to be given to no one but myself. From there, together with my fellow envoys, I went to Jashala to John, wishing to learn what he had in mind. I quickly perceived that he was reaching for revolution and had a desire for power. For he asked me to grant him authority to carry off the grain of Caesar that was stored in the villages of Upper Galilee, saying that he wished to spend it on repairing the walls of his native city. When I understood his design and what he was really scheming to do, I told him I would not permit it, for I intended to keep it either for the Romans or for myself, since the authority over affairs there had likewise been entrusted to me by the community of Jerusalem. Failing to persuade me of this, he turned to my fellow envoys, who were heedless of what was to come and only too ready to take money. He corrupted them with bribes to vote that all the grain in his province should be handed over to him. I alone, overruled, gave way and kept silent. And John brought in a second piece of trickery. He claimed that the Jews living in Caesarea Philippi, being shut in there by order of the king's deputy who administered that domain, had sent to him begging that, since they had no pure oil to use, he should provide for their supply of it, so that they would not be compelled to transgress their ancestral laws by using oil handled by Greeks. But John said this not out of piety, but out of the most transparent greed for gain. For knowing that in Caesarea 2 sextarii were sold for 1 drachma, while at Jashala 80 sextarii went for 4 drachmas, he sent off all the oil that was there, having obtained authority to do so, ostensibly with my approval as well. For I did not grant it willingly, but out of fear of the crowd, lest, if I opposed him, I should be stoned by them. So, having yielded, I allowed John to profit greatly from this piece of villainy. Having dismissed my fellow envoys from Jashala to Jerusalem, I turned my attention to the manufacture of weapons and the fortification of the cities. Summoning the most courageous of the brigands, I saw that it was not possible to take their weapons away from them, but I persuaded the people to provide them with pay, telling them it was better to give a little willingly than to stand by and watch their property plundered by these men. And having taken oaths from them that they would not enter the country unless summoned, or except when they had not received their pay, I dismissed them, with instructions to make war neither on the Romans nor on their neighbors. For my chief concern was that Galilee should be at peace. As for the leading men of the Galileans, about 70 in number, wishing to have them, under the pretext of friendship, as hostages of good faith, I made them my companions and fellow travelers, and I took them along to hearings and gave my decisions with their concurrence, striving neither to err from justice through rashness nor to be tainted by any bribe in these matters. Being then about 30 years of age, at a time when, even if one abstains from unlawful desires, it is difficult to escape the slanders that arise from envy, especially when one holds great power, I kept every woman free from insult, and I disdained all the gifts offered to me as if I had no need of them. Indeed, I did not even accept from those who brought them the tithes owed to me as a priest. From the spoils, however, I did take a share when I defeated the Syrians inhabiting the surrounding cities, and this, I confess, I sent to my kinsmen in Jerusalem. Twice I took Sepphoris by force, Tiberias 4 times, and Gadara once. And although I had taken John captive many times when he plotted against me, I punished neither him nor any of the peoples just mentioned, as my narrative will show as it proceeds. On this account, I believe God himself, for those who do what is right do not escape his notice, delivered me out of their hands, and afterward, when I fell into many dangers, preserved me safe, as I shall relate later. So great was the goodwill and loyalty of the mass of the Galileans toward me that, when their cities were taken by force and their wives and children reduced to slavery, they did not so much lament their own misfortunes as show concern for my safety. Seeing this, John grew envious and wrote to me asking permission to go down and make use of the hot springs at Tiberias for the treatment of his body. Suspecting no wrongdoing on his part, I did not prevent him. Moreover, I wrote by name to those to whom the administration of Tiberias had been entrusted by me, instructing them to prepare lodging for John and for those who would come with him, and to supply them with an abundance of provisions. At that time I was staying in a village of Galilee called Cana. But John, on arriving in the city of Tiberias, tried to persuade the people to abandon their loyalty to me and attach themselves to him. Many gladly welcomed his appeal, since they were forever eager for revolution and disposed by nature to change and delighted in factional strife. Above all, Justus and his father Pistis had set out to abandon me and go over to John. But I forestalled and prevented them, for a messenger came to me from Silas, whom I had appointed commander of Tiberias, as I said before, reporting the disposition of the people of Tiberias and urging me to hasten, since if I delayed the city would fall under the power of others. So, upon reading Silas's letter, I took 200 men and marched the whole night through, sending ahead a messenger to announce my arrival to the people of Tiberias. In the morning, as I drew near the city, the crowd came out to meet me, John among them, and greeting me in great agitation, fearing that if his conduct came under scrutiny he might be in danger of destruction, he withdrew hastily to his own lodging. As for me, on reaching the stadium, I dismissed my bodyguard except for one man, and keeping 10 soldiers with him, I tried to address the crowd of Tiberians, standing on a high parapet, and urge them not to abandon their allegiance so quickly. For such a change would bring condemnation upon them, and their next leader would rightly come to view them with suspicion, on the ground that they would not keep faith with him either. I had not yet finished speaking when I heard one of my own people calling to me to come down, saying that this was no time to worry about the goodwill of the Tiberians, but about my own safety and how I might escape my enemies. For John had sent, choosing out the most trustworthy of the soldiers around him, from the 1,000 he had, and had ordered those sent to kill me, having learned that I was alone with my own men, isolated. Those sent did come, and would have carried it out, had I not leapt down from the parapet more quickly, together with my bodyguard James, and been helped up by a certain Herod of Tiberias, who led me to the lake, where I got hold of a boat, boarded it, and against all expectation, escaped my enemies and arrived at Taricheia. When the inhabitants of that city learned of the treachery of the Tiberians, they were greatly incensed. Seizing their arms, they begged to be led against them, saying they wished to exact justice from them on the general's behalf. They also spread the news of what had happened among all the people of Galilee, and these too, being eager to move against the Tiberians, urged that as many as possible should gather and come to them, so that they might act with the general's approval on whatever course was decided. So the Galileans came in great numbers from every side, under arms, and urged me to attack Tiberias, take it by storm, raze it entirely to the ground, and enslave its inhabitants along with their wives and children. My friends who had escaped from Tiberias gave the same advice, but I did not consent, thinking it a terrible thing to begin a civil war. I believed that the quarrel ought to go no further than words. Moreover, I told them it was not to their advantage to do this, since the Romans were hoping that they would destroy themselves through their mutual strife. By saying this, I checked the anger of the Galileans. As for John, his plot having failed, he grew afraid for himself, and taking the soldiers around him, he departed from Tiberias for Gischala, and wrote to me defending his conduct, claiming that what had happened was not done with his approval, and begging me not to entertain any suspicion of him, adding oaths and dreadful curses by which he thought he would be believed concerning what he had written. But the Galileans, since many others again had gathered from the whole country, under arms, knowing the man to be wicked and false to his oaths, begged me to lead them against him, promising to obliterate him utterly, along with Gischala itself. I acknowledged that I was grateful for their zeal, and promised to outdo their goodwill, but I nevertheless urged them to hold back, asking them to bear with me and to forgive me, since I had chosen to quell disturbances without bloodshed. Having persuaded the mass of the Galileans, I arrived at Sepphoris. The men who inhabited that city, having resolved to remain loyal to the Romans and fearing my arrival, tried to distract me with another affair, so as to be free of anxiety about themselves. They accordingly sent to Jesus, the chief brigand on the border of Ptolemais, and promised to give a great sum of money if he, with the force under him, numbering 800, would be willing to kindle war against us. He, giving heed to their promises, wished to fall upon us while we were unprepared and had no foreknowledge of it. He therefore sent to me asking permission to come and pay his respects. When I consented, since I had no prior knowledge of the plot, he took his band of brigands and hastened against me. He did not, however, succeed in accomplishing his villainy come to anything. For while he was already drawing near, one of his men deserted and came to me, disclosing his undertaking. Learning this, I went out into the marketplace, pretending to know nothing of the plot, but I brought with me a large number of armed Galileans and some men of Tiberias as well. Then, having ordered that all the roads be most securely guarded, I instructed the men at the gates to let only Jesus in, together with his chief men, whenever he should arrive, but to shut out the rest, and to strike them if they used force. When they had done as instructed, Jesus came in with a few men. And when I ordered him to throw down his weapons at once, telling him he would be killed if he refused, he saw the armed men surrounding him on every side, took fright, and obeyed. Those of his followers who had been shut out, learning of his capture, fled. And I, calling Jesus aside privately, told him that I was not ignorant of the plot that had been contrived against me, nor of who had sent him, but that I would nonetheless forgive him what he had done, if he were willing to repent and become loyal to me. When he promised to do everything I asked, I released him, allowing him to gather again the men he had before. But I threatened the people of Sepphoris that, if they did not cease their unruly conduct, I would exact justice from them. At about this time, two great men from among those under the authority of the king arrived, from the region of the Trachonites, bringing with them their own horses and weapons, and also secretly bringing money. When the Jews tried to compel them to be circumcised, if they wished to live among them, I did not allow them to be forced, saying that each man ought to worship God according to his own choice and not under compulsion, and that these men, having fled to us for safety, ought not to be made to regret it. The people were persuaded and provided the newcomers generously with everything needed for their accustomed way of life. Meanwhile, King Agrippa sent a force, with Equus Modius as its commander, to take the fortress of Gamala. But those who were sent were not strong enough to surround the fortress. Instead, stationing themselves at the open approaches to the place, they kept up a siege of Gamala. Now Abutius, the cavalry commander who had been entrusted with the command of the Great Plain, hearing that I was present in the village of Simonias, which lay on the borders of Galilee, 60 stadia from his own position, took with him by night the 100 horsemen he had with him, and about 200 foot soldiers, and, adding as allies the inhabitants of the town of Gaba, marched through the night and arrived at the village where I was staying. I drew up my forces to meet him with a large body of men, and Abutius tried to draw us down into the plain, for he had great confidence in his cavalry. We did not comply, however, for I saw the advantage his cavalry would gain if we came down into the plain, since we were all infantry, and so I decided to engage the enemy where we were. And for a while Abutius held his ground bravely with the men around him, but seeing that his cavalry force was of no use in that terrain, he withdrew, having achieved nothing, to the town of Gaba, having lost 3 men in the fighting. I followed close behind with 2,000 armed men, and having come to the town of Bisara, which lies on the border of Ptolemais, 20 stadia from Gaba, where Abutius was staying, I stationed my men outside the village, and having ordered them to guard the roads securely, so that the enemy would not trouble us while we carried off the grain, for a great quantity belonging to Queen Berenice, gathered from the surrounding villages, was stored at Bisara. I loaded the camels and the many donkeys I had brought with me, and sent the grain into Galilee. Having done this, I challenged Abutius to battle, but when he did not respond, for he had been thoroughly cowed by our readiness and boldness, I turned instead against Neoplatonus, having heard that he was ravaging the territory of Tiberias. Neoplatonus was the commander of a cavalry squadron, and had taken charge of Scythopolis to guard it against the enemy. Having thus stopped him from doing further harm to the people of Tiberias, I turned my attention to the care of Galilee. Now John, the son of Levi, whom we said was residing at Jeshala, on learning that everything was going according to my wishes, and that I enjoyed the goodwill of my subjects while striking fear into the enemy, was not pleased at heart, and, thinking that my success would bring about his own downfall, gave way to an envy that was anything but moderate. Hoping to put an end to my good fortune by kindling hatred against me among my subjects, he tried to persuade the inhabitants of Tiberias and Sepphoris, and, in addition, those of Gabara, these being the greatest cities of Galilee, to abandon their loyalty to me and attach themselves to him instead, claiming that he would command them better than I could. The people of Sepphoris, however, since they favored neither of us, having chosen the Romans as their masters, did not agree to his proposal. The people of Tiberias, though they did not accept the idea of revolt, did agree to become his friends. But the inhabitants of Gabara went over to John. Simon was the one who urged them to do so. He was the leading man of the city, and was on terms of friendship and companionship with John. Openly, then, they did not admit to their defection, for they were exceedingly afraid of the Galileans, having had frequent experience of their goodwill toward us. But secretly they watched for a suitable opportunity and plotted against me. And indeed I came into the greatest danger, for the following reason. Some bold young men, natives of Dabarida, having noticed the wife of Ptolemy, the king's steward, passing with a large equipage and some cavalry accompanying her for safety, as she made her journey through the great plain from territory subject to the kings into the Roman-controlled territory, fell upon them suddenly. They forced the woman to flee, and plundered everything she was carrying, and came to Terracea bringing to me 4 mules laden with clothing and other goods. There was also no small weight of silver, and 500 gold pieces. This I wished to preserve for Ptolemy, since he was in fact a fellow Jew, and our laws forbid us to rob even our enemies. So I told those who had brought the goods that they must be kept safe, so that from their sale the walls of Jerusalem might be repaired. The young men were angered at not receiving a share of the spoils, as they had expected, and went off to the surrounding villages of Tiberias, saying that I intended to betray their country to the Romans. For, they said, I had used a clever pretense with them, claiming that I was keeping the goods taken in the raid for the repair of the walls of the city of Jerusalem, whereas in truth I had resolved to give the stolen goods back to their owner. And in this at least I was not mistaken in my judgment. For after they had left, I sent for the 2 leading men, Dashan and Janius the son of Levi, who were among the king's closest friends, and ordered them to take the vessels taken in the raid and send them on to him, threatening them with death as the penalty if they reported this to anyone else. But when a rumor spread through the whole of Galilee that their country was about to be betrayed by me to the Romans, and everyone was inflamed against me in their rage, the inhabitants of Terracea, themselves also supposing the young men to be telling the truth, persuaded my bodyguards and the armed men, leaving me asleep, to come quickly to the Hippodrome, in order to deliberate there with everyone about their general. When they were persuaded and had assembled, a great crowd had already gathered, and they all raised a single cry, that the traitor who had done them such wrong ought to be punished. Above all, the one who incited them was Jesus, the son of Sapphias, at that time the ruler of Tiberias, a wicked man by nature and given to causing great disturbances, a factious troublemaker if ever there was one. And taking the laws of Moses in his hands and coming forward into their midst, he said, "Fellow citizens, even if you cannot bring yourselves to hate Joseph for your own sakes, at least look to the ancestral laws, which your own commander was about to betray, and out of hatred of wrongdoing on their account, punish the man who dared such things." Having said this, and with the crowd shouting in agreement, he took some armed men and hastened to the house where I was lodging, intending to kill me. I, having no forewarning of this, was overcome with fatigue and was resting before the disturbance broke out. But Simon, who had been entrusted with the guarding of my person, and who alone had remained with me, seeing the onrush of the citizens, woke me and told me of the danger threatening me, urging me to die nobly as befitted a general by his own hand, before the enemy should arrive to force me to it or to kill me themselves. He spoke thus, but I, committing my fate to God, resolved to go out and face the crowd. So I changed into black clothing and fastened my sword about my neck, and went by another road, by which I thought none of my enemies would meet me, to the Hippodrome. Appearing there suddenly, I fell face down, drenching the ground with my tears, and seemed to everyone a pitiable sight. Perceiving the change in the crowd's mood, I tried to divide their opinions before the armed men could return from the house. I conceded that I had done wrong, as they themselves believed, but I asked to be allowed first to explain for what purpose I had kept the money taken in the raid, and then to die, if they so ordered. When the crowd bade me speak, the armed men arrived, and, catching sight of me, rushed forward intending to kill me. But when the crowd ordered them to hold back, they obeyed, expecting that, once I had confessed to them that I had kept the money for the king, They would then, on the strength of my having admitted the treachery, put me to death. When silence had fallen over all of them, I said, "Men, my kinsmen, if it is just that I should die, I do not beg to be spared. Yet I wish, before I die, to tell you the truth. I knew that this city was most hospitable to strangers, and was eagerly filled with so many men who had left their own homelands to come and share our fortune, and so I resolved to build walls from the money, about which your anger is directed, spending it on their construction." At this, a voice arose from the people of Terakia and the foreigners, acknowledging their gratitude and urging me to take courage, but the Galileans and the people of Tiberias persisted in their anger, and a dispute broke out among them, some threatening to punish me, others urging contempt for such threats. But when I promised to build walls for Tiberias as well, and for their other cities that needed them, they trusted me, and each withdrew to his own home. And I, having escaped, beyond all hope, the danger just described, returned to my house with my friends and 20 armed men. But once again the bandits and those responsible for the sedition, fearing for themselves lest I exact justice from them for what they had done, took 600 armed men and came against the house where I was staying, intending to burn it down. When the attack was reported to me, I thought it unbecoming to flee, and decided instead to risk something and make use of some boldness. So I ordered the doors of the house to be shut, and going up myself to the upper room, I called out for some men to be sent in to receive the money, for I said that in this way they would cease from their anger. When they sent in the boldest of them, I had him whipped, and ordered one of his hands to be cut off and hung about his neck, and had him thrown out in that state to those who had sent him. Terror and no small fear seized them, and fearing that they too would suffer the same fate if they remained, for they supposed I had more men inside than they had, they took to flight. And I, by using such a stratagem, escaped this second plot as well. But again, certain persons stirred up the crowd, provoking it against the royal grandees who had come to me, saying that men who were unwilling to change over to their customs ought not to be allowed to live, when they had come there to be kept safe among them. And they also slandered the Romans as sorcerers, saying it was by this means that they prevailed. The crowd was quickly persuaded, deceived by the plausibility of things said merely to please them. But when I learned of this, I again tried to teach the people that it was not right to persecute those who had taken refuge with them. And I ridiculed as nonsense the charge concerning sorcery, saying that the Romans would not maintain so many tens of thousands of soldiers if it were by sorcery that they defeated their enemies. While I was saying this, they were persuaded for a little while, but then, drawing back again, they were incited by wicked men against the grandees, and once, armed, they went off to attack their house in Terakia, intending to kill them. When I learned of it, I was afraid that, once this abomination had run its course, the city would become inaccessible to those wishing to take refuge there. So I went to the house of the grandees with some others, and having shut it up and made a channel from it leading to the lake, I sent for a boat, and, embarking in it with them, crossed over to the borders of Hippos, and, having given them the value of their horses, for I had not been able to bring the horses with me, given how the escape had happened, I sent them off, after urging them at length to bear the misfortune that had befallen them with courage. I myself was greatly distressed at being forced to send those who had taken refuge with me back again into enemy territory, though I judged it better for them to die at the hands of the Romans, should that happen, than in my own country. As it turned out, however, they were saved, for King Agrippa forgave them their offenses. And that is how the affair concerning them ended. Meanwhile, the inhabitants of the city of Tiberias wrote to the king, asking him to send a force to guard their territory, saying that they wished to attach themselves to him. That is what they wrote to him. But when I arrived among them, they asked me to build walls for them, as I had promised, for they had heard that Terakia was already walled. I agreed then, and having made all the preparations needed for the building, I ordered the master builders to set to work. On the third day after this, as I was on my way to Terakia, 30 stadia from Tiberias, it happened that some Roman cavalry were seen riding not far from the city, which gave the impression that the force sent by the king had arrived. At once then, they raised cries in praise of the king, but full of abuse against me. And someone came running to report their intention to me, that they had resolved to revolt from me. When I heard this, I was greatly disturbed, for I had, as it happened, sent the armed men away from Tarichaea to their own homes, since the next day was the Sabbath, for I was unwilling that the crowd of soldiers to trouble the people of Tarichaea. Indeed, whenever I spent time among them, I took no precaution at all for my own protection, having often had proof, from the inhabitants themselves, of their loyalty toward me. Having with me only 7 of the men-at-arms and my friends, I was at a loss what to do. To send for my own force was not something I approved, since the present day was already coming to a close. For even if it arrived on the following day, the laws forbade us to take up arms, however great the necessity might seem to press. And if I allowed the people of Tarichaea and the foreigners among them to plunder the city, I saw that they would not be sufficient for the task, and that any delay of mine would prove very long indeed. For I judged that the force from the king would arrive first, and that I would be driven out of the city. So I resolved to employ a certain stratagem against them. At once I stationed the most trustworthy of my friends at the gates of Tarichaea to keep watch, so as to let out safely any who wished to leave, and having summoned the leading men of the households, I ordered each of them to launch a boat, board it, take along its pilot, and follow me to the city of Tiberias. I myself, together with my friends and the men-at-arms, 7 in number, as I said, boarded and sailed for Tiberias. When the people of Tiberias realized that the force from the king had not in fact come to them, but saw the whole lake full of boats, they were afraid for their city, and, terrified at the thought that the vessels were full of soldiers, they changed their minds. Throwing down their weapons, they came out with their wives and children to meet me, uttering many words of praise for me, since they supposed that I had not yet learned of their intentions, and they begged me to spare the city. When I drew near, I ordered the pilots to cast anchor while still far from the shore, so that the people of Tiberias would not discover that the boats were empty of soldiers, and drawing close myself in one of the boats, I rebuked them for their folly, and for being so ready, without any just cause, to abandon their loyalty to me. I promised, however, that I would grant them full pardon for the future, if they would send me 10 of the leading men of the populace. When they readily obeyed and sent the men I had named, I put them aboard and sent them off to Tarichaea, to be held under guard. By this stratagem, I gradually got the whole council into my hands, a few at a time, and sent them off to the city just mentioned, together with the most prominent men of the common people, no fewer in number than the counselors. When the populace saw into what depth of trouble they had come, they begged me to punish the man responsible for the sedition. His name was Clitus, a bold and rash young man. Since I considered it unholy to kill a man of my own people, yet was compelled to punish him, I ordered one of my bodyguards, Levi, to go forward and cut off one of Clitus's hands. But the man so ordered was afraid to go forward alone into so great a crowd, and, unwilling to let his cowardice become apparent to the Tiberians, I called Clitus himself and said, "Since you deserve to lose both your hands for having proved so ungrateful toward me, be your own executioner, lest by refusing you incur a worse punishment." When he begged repeatedly to be allowed to keep one hand, I scarcely consented, and he, glad not to lose both hands, took a sword and cut off his own left hand. And this put an end to the sedition. The people of Tiberias, once I had reached Tarichaea and they learned of the stratagem I had used against them, marveled that I had put a stop to their disloyalty without any bloodshed. As for myself, I sent for those of the Tiberian populace who were in prison, among them were Justus and his father Pistis, and made them my guests at dinner. And during the feast, I told them that I myself was well aware that the power of Rome surpassed all others, but that I kept silent about this on account of the brigands. I advised them to do the same, waiting for a favorable opportunity, and not to be exasperated with me as their commander, since they would not easily find another so reasonably disposed toward them. And I reminded Justus that before my arrival from Jerusalem, the Galileans had cut off the hands of his brother, charging him with the crime of having forged letters, even before the war. And that after the withdrawal of Philip, the people of Gamala, in their strife with the Babylonians, had killed Chares, who was a kinsman of Philip, and how they had chastised, with moderation, Jesus, his brother, the husband of Justus's sister. Having said these things at the feast to Justus and his companions, I ordered at daybreak that they all be released from custody. Before these events, it happened that Philip, son of Jasimus, departed from the fortress of Gamala for the following reason. Philip, having learned that Varus had been removed by King Agrippa, and that his successor, Modius Equus, a man who was his friend and long acquainted with him, had arrived, wrote to him, reporting his own circumstances and asking him to forward the letters he sent on to the kings. Modius, having received the letters, was overjoyed to learn from them that Philip was safe, and sent the letters on to the kings, who were then near Berytus. When King Agrippa learned that the report about Philip had been false, for a rumor had spread that he was commanding the Jews in the war against the Romans, he sent horsemen to escort Philip. When Philip arrived, Agrippa greeted him warmly and pointed him out to the Roman commanders, showing them that this indeed was the Philip about whom the rumor had circulated, that he had revolted from Rome. He ordered him to take some horsemen and go as quickly as possible to the fortress of Gamala, to bring out from there all his household, and to restore the Babylonians once more to Batania. He further charged him to take every precaution against any revolutionary movement arising among the subjects. Philip, then, upon receiving these instructions from the king, made haste to carry out what had been ordered. But Joseph, son of the midwife, having incited many bold young men to join him, rose up against the leading men of Gamala and persuaded them to revolt from the king and take up arms, on the ground that through this they would recover their freedom. Some he compelled by force. Those who did not agree with their views, they put to death. They also killed Chars, and along with him a kinsman of his, Jesus, and they also killed the husband of Justus of Tiberias's sister, as I have already said. They also wrote to me, asking me to send them a force of men-at-arms and men to rebuild the walls of their city. I refused neither of their requests. The region of Gaulonitis also revolted from the king, as far as the village of Salama. At Seleucia and Sagane, villages naturally very strong, I built walls, and likewise I walled the villages of Upper Galilee that were exceedingly rocky, their names being Jamnia, Amaroth, and Achaber. I also fortified the cities of Lower Galilee, Terakia, Tiberias, and Sepphoris, and the villages of the Cave of Arbela, Bersobe, Selaim, Jotapata, Kaphirath, Camuse, Sagane, Jaffa, and Mount Tabor. In these places I also stored up much grain and weapons for the security to come afterward. As for John, son of Levi, his hatred toward me grew ever more intense, since he bore my success with resentment. Having therefore resolved by all means to get me out of the way, he set about building walls for his own native city of Jeshala, and sent his brother Simon, together with Jonathan, son of Sisena, with about 100 men-at-arms, to Jerusalem, to Simon son of Gamaliel, to urge him to persuade the community of the Jeruselmites to take the command away from me, and to vote him the authority over the Galileans instead. This Simon was a native of the city of Jerusalem, of very distinguished lineage, and of the sect of the Pharisees, who are reputed to surpass the others in strict observance of the ancestral laws. He was a man full of understanding and judgment, capable of setting right, by his own good sense, affairs that had fallen into a bad state. He was, moreover, an old friend and intimate of John, though at that time he was on unfriendly terms with me. Having received the request, he set about persuading the chief priests Ananus and Jesus, son of Gamalas, and some others of their party, that they should cut me down while I was still growing, and not allow me to increase to the utmost degree of reputation, saying that it would be to their advantage if I were removed from Galilee. And he urged those around Ananus not to delay, lest, learning of it beforehand, I should march against the city with a large force. Such was the counsel Simon gave. But the chief priest Ananus declared that the matter was not easy to accomplish, for many of the chief priests and of the leading men of the populace testified that I commanded well. And to bring an accusation against a man against whom they could say nothing just would be the act of base men. When Simon heard this from Ananus, he asked them to keep silent and not spread their words abroad among many, saying that he himself would see to it that I should be removed from Galilee all the sooner. And, summoning John's brother, he instructed him to send gifts to Ananus and his associates, saying that in this way, perhaps, he would persuade them to change their minds. And in the end, Simon accomplished what he had set out to do, for Ananus and those with him, corrupted by the money, agreed to expel me from Galilee without anyone else in the city knowing of it. And indeed, they resolved to send men who differed in rank but were alike in education. Two of them were of the common people, Jonathan and Ananias, Pharisees by sect, while the third, Jazar, was of a priestly family, himself also a Pharisee. And Simon was the youngest of the group, from among the chief priestly families. They instructed these men, upon arriving, to inquire of the Galilean populace the reason why they loved me. And if they said it was because I was of the city of Jerusalem, they too were to say that all four of them were from that city. And if it was because of my knowledge of the laws, they too were to claim that they themselves were not ignorant of the ancestral customs. And if, further, they said they loved me because of my priesthood, then two of them were to reply that they too were priests. Having given these instructions to Jonathan and his companions, they gave them 40,000 pieces of silver out of the public funds. And when they heard that a certain Galilean named Jesus, who had about him a company of 600 men-at-arms, was staying in Jerusalem, they then summoned him and, giving him 3 months' pay, ordered him to accompany Jonathan and his party in obedience to them. And to 300 of the citizens, also they gave money for provisions for the whole company and ordered them to follow the envoys. When these men had been persuaded and made ready for the expedition, Jonathan and his companions set out, taking with them also John's brother and 100 men-at-arms, having received instructions from those who had sent them, that if I laid down my arms willingly, they should send me alive to the city of Jerusalem. But if I resisted, they should kill me without any hesitation, for the order was theirs to give. They had also written to John, telling him to make ready for war against me, and they instructed the inhabitants of Sepphoris, Gabara, and Tiberias to send military support to John. When my father wrote to me of these things, for Jesus, son of Gamaliel, one of those who had taken part in that very council, a man who was my friend and intimate, had disclosed them to him. I was deeply pained to learn that the citizens had proved so ungrateful toward me as to order my death out of envy, and also because my father, in his letters, earnestly begged me to come to him, saying that he longed to see his son before he died. I told these things to my friends, and said that within 3 days I would leave their territory and set out for my own homeland. Grief seized all who heard this, and they begged me, weeping, not to abandon them to destruction, if they should be deprived of my command. When I did not yield to their entreaties, but was concerned for my own safety, the Galileans, fearing that if I departed they would become an easy prey for the brigands, sent messengers throughout the whole of Galilee to announce my intention of leaving. Many gathered together from every quarter on hearing this, with their wives and children, not, I think, so much out of affection for me as out of fear for their own safety, since they supposed that as long as I remained they would suffer no harm. So they all came to the great plain in which they were encamped. Its name is Asaches. During that night I saw a wondrous dream. For when I had gone to bed, grieved and troubled over what had been written to me, I seemed to see someone standing over me and saying, "Cease, man, from your grief of soul and rid yourself of all fear. For the very things that grieve you shall make you great and most fortunate in all things, and you shall prosper not only in this but in many other matters besides. Do not lose heart, but remember that you must also fight against the Romans." Having seen this dream, I rose, eager to go down to the plain. And at the sight of me, the whole multitude of the Galileans, among them were women and children, threw themselves upon their faces, and, weeping, begged me not to abandon them to their enemies, nor to depart and leave their country to become an object of outrage to their foes. When I would not be persuaded by their entreaties, they compelled me by oaths to remain among them, and reviled the people of Jerusalem bitterly for not allowing their country to be at peace. Hearing these things and seeing the dejection of the crowd, I was moved to pity, and judged it right, for the sake of so great a multitude, to face even manifest dangers. So I consented to remain, and, having ordered 5,000 of them to come as men-at-arms, provided with their own rations, I sent the rest away to their homes. When the 5,000 had arrived, I took them, along with the 3,000 soldiers who were with me and 80 horsemen, and made my way to the village of Chabalo, on the border of Ptolemais, and there I kept my forces together, making ready, on the pretext of the war against Placidus. This man had arrived with two cohorts of infantry and one squadron of cavalry, sent by Cestius Gallus to burn the villages of the Galileans that lay near Ptolemais. While he was pitching a camp before the city of the Ptolemaeans, I too set up my camp about 60 stadia from that village. Time and again, then, we led our forces out as if for battle, but nothing came of it beyond a few skirmishes. For Placidus, seeing how eager I was for a fight, took fright himself and held back, though he did not withdraw from Ptolemais. At this same time, Jonathan arrived with his fellow envoys, whom we said had been sent from Jerusalem by Simon and Ananus the high priest, plotting to seize me by treachery, since he did not dare to make an open attempt. He wrote me the following letter: Jonathan and those sent with him by the people of Jerusalem, to Josephus, greetings. We have been sent many times, on the report of the leading men in Jerusalem that John of Gischala has repeatedly plotted against you, to rebuke him and to urge him to obey you from now on. Wishing to consult with you about our common business, we call on you to come to us quickly, and not with many men, for the village could not accommodate a large body of soldiers. They wrote this expecting one of two things: either that I would come to them without weapons and so fall into their hands, or that if I brought many men with me, they would judge me an enemy. The letter was brought to me by a horseman, an insolent young fellow who had once served in the king's army. It was already the second hour of the night, at which time I happened to be feasting with my friends and the leading men of Galilee. When a servant announced to me that a Jewish horseman had come, he was called in at my order. He did not so much as offer a greeting, but simply held out the letter and said, "This is what the men who have come from Jerusalem have sent you. Write your reply quickly, for I am in a hurry to return to them." Those reclining at table were amazed at the soldier's impudence, but I invited him to sit down and dine with us. When he refused, I kept the letter in my hands just as I had received it, and turned my conversation with my friends to other matters. After no great while I rose, and having dismissed the rest to their beds, I asked only four of my closest friends to remain, and having ordered my servant to prepare wine, I unfolded the letter without anyone watching, and quickly grasping from it the intent of what was written, I sealed it up again. And as though I had not read it beforehand, but simply held it in my hands, I ordered that 20 drachmas be given the soldier for his journey. When he took the money and expressed his thanks, I saw that he was greedy for gain and that this was the way to catch him. "But," I said, "if you are willing to drink with us, you shall receive 1 drachma for every cup." He gladly agreed, and drinking a great deal of wine in order to get more money, and becoming drunk, he could no longer keep the secret, but blurted out unasked both the plot that had been laid and the fact that I had been condemned to death by them. On hearing this, I wrote back in the following terms: Josephus to Jonathan and those with him, greetings. I am glad to learn that you have arrived safely in Galilee, especially since I shall now be able to hand over to you the charge of affairs here and go to my own country, something I have long wished to do. I ought indeed to have come to meet you not only at Zaloth, but far beyond it, even without being asked. But I beg your pardon for not being able to do this, since I am keeping watch over Placidus at Chabalo, as he has it in mind to march up into Galilee. Come to me then, once you have read this letter. Farewell. Having written this, I gave it to the soldier to carry, and sent along with him 30 of the most reputable men of Galilee, instructing them to greet Jonathan and his companions, but to say nothing else. I also assigned to each of them 1 trusted soldier to keep watch, so that none of those I sent should have any conversation with Jonathan's party. So they set out. But Jonathan and his men, having failed in their first attempt, sent me another letter of this kind: Jonathan and those with him, to Josephus, greetings.